Danilana Kitchen talks about food. Danilana Kitchen talks recipes. Danilana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Danilana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctica.
And I'm Donna Prisquintas. And Lana, we should be singing Jingle Bells or something. Or
we should.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly.
Oh, I love decking the halls,
oh,
Donna.
It's time.
I do.
It's time.
This is our solstice show. Yes, it is. And we come to you from the studios of KHOI Community Radio. We've been doing that for, these many years, Donna. And this show is going to be kind of a compilation of the best of, because we have lots of best of. So we'll have a little bit of old shows and new shows, all wishing you a good solstice. To start off, I would like to share a poem by poet Ted Kooser. Ted Kooser is a poet who lives in
Nebraska, maybe?
Nebraska now, I think. Yes. He used to live in Ames, but he doesn't anymore. And this is a poem from a book called Winter Morning Walks. And the poems in this collection were written while he walked every morning around his farm out in the prairie. He was diagnosed with cancer and was going through some treatments at the time. And he was told that he could not go out in the noonday sun. And so he spent a lot of time before the sun came up, kind of gathering his wits, composing poems, and walking on his rural roads. And here's one he wrote for December 21st. Clear and 5 degrees. Perfectly still this solstice morning in bone-cracking cold. Nothing moving, or so one might think. But as I walk on the road, the wind held in the heart of every tree flows to the end of each twig and forms a bud. A bit of a thought for the turning of the year. Well, Donna.
Well, and it is the turning of the year. So we will now hit the shortest day of the year, or the longest night of the year. But the upside to that is now the sun will be up longer and longer and longer. And so this is our turning point. We're now moving just like those trees where the sap is going out to the tip of the buds. We will start moving back towards spring.
Isn't that nice how that works?
What a cycle. Somebody did a great job on this planning, I got to tell you.
Good job.
It's elegant.
And we celebrate. We celebrate. People have been lining up huge Stonehenge stones and pointing it at the sun. It's a big deal, folks, that the sun comes back.
All over the world.
All over the
world. The whole world community experiences the same thing.
Yes, it does. So what's going on at your house?
Well, how I like to celebrate the solstice, which is the tradition from which Christmas sprang, as a matter of fact. So in some ways, this is, you know, I consider this the primary Christmas. You know, it all starts happening now and just goes on for more than 12 days, as a matter of fact. What I like to do on the evening of the solstice is turn off all the electric lighting. And light lamps. I've got my lamp oil and cleaning out my lamps. I only use them once a year, basically. But I get candles all over the house, and everything is lamp lit, and it is really beautiful.
Yes, it is. It soothes the soul. It quiets us down, and you think, you can't see anything, and
Well, if you put enough candles, you can do that. And it's something all of us can do. Now, of course, you have to be careful where you put the candles, and you know you're dealing with real life flame. But you know, human beings did this for thousands of years, so we can do it one night a year to kind of remember our ancient humanity. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And let me tell you, everything looks better by candlelight. You don't see all the dirt that you missed in the house cleaning. Everybody has a radiant complexion. You know, life is beautiful by candlelight. So let's get those lamps lit and the candles out, and it have a happy, merry, wonderful solstice.
Great. And enjoy this encore presentation of the Donalana Kitchen. We are delighted to have a visit from Mary Swander, Poet Laureate from the state of Iowa. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. First, a few words about the winter solstice.
Well, in case you haven't noticed, the days are getting shorter and shorter and less sun. Winter solstice is the return of the sun. It is the shortest day, but it is also, it's the turning point. So even though we all know that we have a long winter ahead of us, each day will get a little bit longer.
Yes, it's nice how that works out.
It's encouraging us.
Yes, yes. The term Yule, Y-U-L-E, is often used for this time of year. And Yule derives from the Anglo-Saxon, which means yoke of the year, like yoke for oxen. It's a balancing point across time, across the ebbs of sunlight. The Yule Festival is many different celebrations, and the celebration of Mother Night starts at sunset on the 20th of December. And that's when the sun turns around and starts coming back to us.
And in case you missed Sunday night, it is basically a three-day period where the sun is the shortest, the 21st being the middle day of it.
And, of course, us being human beings and us being on this planet for a long time, people have been celebrating this sort of thing for a long time. For many, many traditions, it's the time when the sun, S-U-N, or sun, S-O-N, gets reborn. There's a lot of deities, including Jesus Christ, that gets born this time of year.
Lots and lots of cultures all over the world.
Yes. Oh, and you mentioned something about fire and raisins.
Oh, this is an old, I think it's an English tradition, and this is for the 12 days of Christmas. So on the 12th day, you take a kind of a, you're supposed to have a party on that day too, right? So, and we did this one year. It was really, really fun. You have a sort of a wide, shallow dish, and you put a bunch of raisins in it, and you pour the brandy over it. Then you light the brandy, and everyone is supposed to take, with their fingers, pick a raisin out of the burning brandy. And brandy burns at a very low temperature, so it's actually not that hot, but it's kind of, it's a little bit thrilling to stick your hand in the fire.
Sounds real showy. It's really fun. What a thing to giggle about.
Yes, long children about. Love it, but don't do it for little children.
Oh, no, no, no. That sounds good. Mary, do you have any solstice celebrations or solstice ideas?
Well, yeah. I mean, I live in the middle of the Amish community, and they don't have any electricity, and so sort of every day is a solstice for them. Kerosene lamps and candles. But just sitting here, I had all sorts of great old-timey memories of my childhood. My little Irish grandmother would every year make plum pudding and light it on fire.
Oh, that's right.
It was just wonderful as a kid, to see that. And my mother made very, very yummy divinity. But it made her a nervous wreck because she was constantly watching the barometer, to see if it was going to turn out. And sometimes it didn't. And then our dog's name was Happy, would be very happy.
He would get the divinity?
Oh.
Rot his teeth out, probably. Oh.
Well, happy solstice to the doggy, then.
That's
very good. Well, Mary, you have been a wonderful part of this community for a long time, and we've always enjoyed your writing and your reading and your good sense of humor. Do you have something to share with us today?
I do. I have a little piece called the Amish Christmas Pageant, and it's a little essay about one of the things I really look forward to so much every year, which is the Christmas pageant in the one-room school in Amish land. Squeezed together on the hard wooden benches in the meeting room of the country schoolhouse, we sang Christmas carols, a slow, modal sound echoing off the plain pine walls. It came upon a midnight clear. Outside, the storm cocooned us in snow, the flakes swirling through the darkness, covering the horses at the hitching post. It was the night of the Christmas program in my neighborhood, a rural Iowa community where I am one of the few English or non-Amish. Several families were delayed, their sleighs inching over waist-high drifts. Malin, the minister, kept us singing, his hand moving up and down with a steady rhythm. That glorious time of old. Then some older boys extinguished the kerosene lanterns hanging from the ceiling hooks. Our voices hushed. A chorus of young voices arose from the basement steps, the notes pure and clear. 13 Amish children and their teacher, who couldn't have been more than 18 years old, wound through the meeting room. Each child carried a single white candle, the light glowing in their hands. With angels bending toward the earth. The candles were snuffed, the lanterns relit, and the children went into a sing-song rhyming recitation of a poem dedicated to Grandma. Just one grandma, I thought? There have to be others here. The room was packed with older women, their shawls draped over their shoulders, their white hair pulled back into buns. But when the poem was finished, just one grandma stood up and bowed. I realized that she was the ancestor of all the children, these siblings and cousins smiling out at us with the same grin that swept across the old woman's face. We kept our gifts small this year and gave money to a needy children's fund, Malin announced, handing out small packages wrapped in old grocery bags and tied with bright ribbons. The boys received a pair of pliers or a pocket knife, the girls a comb or handkerchief. The older children lined up against the wall, the younger ones disappearing into the coat room. God loves all the children of the world, their voices sang. One by one, verse by verse, the younger children reappeared. 7-year-old Perry's head bobbed under a huge sombrero, his blonde bangs falling down in his face. 8-year-old Samuel wore a thick hooded fur parka and clomped across the floor in snowshoes. 9-year-old Marvin wore a Native American headdress. Even though I agreed with the sentiment of the skit, I squirmed in my seat a bit, uncomfortable with these old stereotypes. Then 10-year-old Hannah jogged in running shoes and a down jacket. God even loves the English, the teacher laughed. That's good, I thought, knowing that in the end, no matter what the clothing or nationality, we all descend from a common ancestor. I grinned across the room at Grandma.
Thank you, Mary. What a wonderful story. You have a really wonderful opportunity to enjoy a community that is seldom we think of that sort of community anymore. There used to be small towns and closer-knit farm families that we were connected to in past generations, but that is still going on.
No, that's right. It's a real neighborhood. That's what I tell people. People come, you know, to visit me and, like, from Chicago or something. They always say, oh, don't you get bored out here? What do you have to do out here? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's something going on all the time that's so incredibly interesting. And they say, well, do you know any of these weird people, these neighbors you live? I'm like, yeah, I know a few of them. And I'm really so privileged to be included in moments like that. I think, you know, this really, well, first of all, it's, as you see from the piece, it's one or two big, huge extended families. But then neighbors have a special niche. And, you know, we get together and celebrate birthdays and holidays. And we have a
neighborhood picnic every summer that's just to die for. And you can really have a great, if you want a great game of volleyball, come to that picnic.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Well, by way of explanation, we didn't say this, but Mary lives in Ames, but she also has an old Amish farmhouse over near Kelowna, where she lives.
Old Amish schoolhouse.
Yeah, it's a schoolhouse.
Yeah.
That's a house.
Yeah. It's an old schoolhouse. Yeah. It's sort of a, it's really, that's also interesting because it's like I live in a historical place. The schoolhouse is the only public building for Amish, and so they all have an attachment there.
So, but you, it was your schoolhouse that you live in now, the schoolhouse that they use?
Yes.
Okay.
Used to go to. And actually, it's coming up this summer. Every 5 years, we have a Fairview School reunion.
Oh.
And so, like, everybody that's still alive that went to that schoolhouse comes back. And it's, you know, they sing their little songs. They bring old report cards and pictures. They tell stories.
Didn't you say that all the women come in and clean from top to bottom?
That's the best part. That's why I insist we keep this tradition going, because the day before, like, a squadron of, like, 7 to 10 women will come in, and, you know, it's like having spring house cleaning for me. They take down all the curtains. They, you know, wash the floor, everything. And then the men come with their, like, weed whackers, and they, you know, they'll mow the lawn. Oh, it's just great. Trim the bushes, paint the fence posts. It's fantastic. So
lovely.
Highly recommend it.
How large a community is this? How many families do you think live all around you in this group?
They're, it's big. There are 5,000 Amish and different Mennonite sects in that community. So it's, you know, it's significant. It's the largest Amish community west of the Mississippi River.
And you've done a great job of telling their story. I know generally people who choose to live that sort of lifestyle do not care to have their faces and their stories told.
No.
But somehow you tell them with respect and generosity, and they're your friends.
No, they are. Yes. They are. They crack jokes all the time. They're like, watch out. Don't let her next to you at the, you know, sitting at the table. She's got a little tape recorder in her pocket. She takes down every single thing we say. I don't have a recorder. And they go, you can't possibly remember all that. And I said, yes, I actually do.
Yep. You're very good.
Actually, the name of the book that Mary was reading from is called Out of This World, A Woman's Life Among the Amish.
Yeah.
And I love that book. I just get a copy or get it from the library or something. It's
right.
It really,
you can get, you can, they still have some in bookstores and online, and Ames Public Library has
one
a copy
of Mary's many books, as a matter of fact. But this one is very Iowan.
Mm-hmm. When was this book written?
This is a while ago. This came out in 96, I think. Mm-hmm. And but you know, what's impressed me about solstice, Christmas in that area is that, yeah, it's very reverential, but it's very, you know, there's no commercialism to it. And so, you know, it's sort of like the old true meaning of Christmas. It's to encourage people to give to each other, to charities. It's, you know, the Amish, it's hard to get together when you're in a buggy and a horse, you know, travel long distances.
And they really do just travel in horses,
right.
Horses and buggies.
Right.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And so, and then they're different communities. So the next community is about 20 miles away. That's a long trip in a buggy, and they do make that trip. But so they often combine Thanksgiving and Christmas with their families. You know, they're just like, you English, why'd you put those two holidays right together? So we have to get back in the buggy and do this all over again? And so they're like, okay, we'll just fold them together.
So they blame you for everything, Mary. I think this is good.
They still can't quite figure out our culture. I think it's just funny because you can see, you know, you get to see your culture through somebody else's eyes, and they're always scratching their heads.
I'd like to see a sleigh.
That's my favorite part of winter.
It's mythic, but I have never actually seen one.
Oh, they're really cool. I've gotten to ride in them and everything. It's so cool.
Oh, for goodness sakes, how wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, sleighs make total sense. You go right over the top of the snow to grandmother's house. And
Are bells added to the horses? Yeah,
there are bells, jingle bells.
Oh, there are bells. I just knew there might be.
Yeah.
Are the bells decorative? The Amish aren't decorative, are they?
They'll put them on the sleigh, or you know, no, they're not real decorative. There's no Christmas trees. There's no wreaths. There's none of that. And of course, there's no blinking lights.
But of course, of course, you could polish the bells.
Well, are the bells a safety feature or something?
It probably started out that way. Yeah, like here we come.
You can't hear a sled the way you can hear a wagon.
Yeah, and you know now they have to have like the triangle slow moving vehicle.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's all you have.
No lanterns.
Well, yeah. Well, now, in the old sleighs, they didn't have that. But now on the buggies, they have like a battery-powered flashing light, a lot of them for safety reasons. But, boy, I'll tell you, driving out there at night, I take it really slow because you never know what you're going to come up upon on the
next
hill. On
the roads,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
They're moving at a different speed.
Oh, lovely. So are you headed back to that area for Christmas?
I am.
Oh, how nice.
That'd be great. Yeah. How and nice. There's... I always love to get in on caroling over there as the young people go around. Oh, it's so great in horse-drawn wagons and carol, you know, for different people. You open your door and there are 15 young Amish kids on your doorstep singing in three-part harmony.
Oh, goodness. And they're used to singing together. I mean.
Oh, yeah. You know, and again, they're usually related, so they have that kind of Everly Brothers, you know, same vocal cord.
That makes sense. The Amish Everly Brothers. That's good. I had a wonderful experience this past weekend. Some of us here in Ames got together at a friend's house for a potluck and a caroling party. But unlike this community that you talk about, we all in our past probably have Christmas music, but so few of us even sing at all anymore. Mm-hmm. So we all look at one another and can all remember the first line to everything, and we belt it into it, and then it kind of drizzles off. Because not only don't we know the words anymore.
You don't know the verses.
We don't know the verses, and oh, how does that start? And we're a little afraid of singing. So so this year, this was the second annual. So this year I printed up a bunch of music, which helped a whole lot.
Yeah. And oh, so you had the words.
There's nothing worse.
Jogs the memory. Yeah.
But it was really a fun thing to do. And it was a fine chance to sing and surprise and delight the neighbors. Because not only do we just sing in this one living room, but we had the great idea to, let's go visit so-and-so and visit so-and-so. They had no idea we were coming. And so there was this knock on the door about 6:30. And people would come kind of bleary-eyed. And they would smile because they'd recognize some of us. And we sang for people. And surprised the dickens out of them, and it was really fun. And then, of course, we went back and ate. So it was a fine thing to do. Caroling is a really fun thing to do.
And the weather was quite reasonable.
The weather was great. Last year, it was very cold, but we toughed it out, and we lost our voices. This year, it was a very English Charles Dickens sort of thing. It was very wet and foggy, and we were so good. Okay, yes, in the bleak midwinter kind of caroling we did.
It was so wet that on Sunday, what I was doing was making divinity. I have to say, it was the worst experience of my – it tastes good, but the texture is just – you know, they call it divinity fudge, of course, and I had been to visit my only remaining aunt, who's 95, and we were talking about Christmas candies and black walnuts and, divinity. So I said, all right, I will make divinity this year, having never done it before. So I'm mailing some to her. So I'm getting the divinity ready, and with that humidity, I just could not get it to firm up. It was gooey. It was sticky. I stuck it in the oven. Now it came out crunchy like meringues, and you can sink your teeth into it. It was terrible. It tastes good, but the texture, it's all wrong.
Oh, divinity.
Gooey, gooey, gooey.
Oh, let's take a little break and think about winter here with the snowflake reel. We're back. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio, KHOI Community Radio, the heart of Iowa. Thanks for listening to this program. We appreciate your ears. We're back here with Mary Swander, who's sharing some of her...
The Iowa Poet Laureate.
Yes, Iowa Poet Laureate. And we are here sharing some of her Christmas... She's sharing some of her Christmas and solstice and winter memories and her wonderful reading. She's going to share another story with us. Take it away, Mary.
By the power invested in me as your emperor, I do decree that everyone in the Roman world must find his way back to his hometown to register. Caesar Augustus stood in the middle of Fairview School. 50 shepherds, sheep, kings, and angels gathered around him. He read from a long scroll, enunciating perfectly and booming the words out with clear authority. A census will be taken of my entire kingdom. A few days before Christmas, I assembled friends from all over the area, and we reenacted the nativity scene, the living creche, a traditional place for Christmas pageants. Fairview School, where I live now, provided the perfect setting, with the ground frozen but not yet impassable, the Iowa flag flying from the pole in a steady breeze, but not yet a howling wind, and a few snowflakes just beginning to fall, but not yet turning into a blizzard. There was no script, and parts were not assigned, although cross-gender roles were encouraged. At first, we had a good old-fashioned Midwestern potluck dinner. Beginning in the late afternoon, just before the sunset, the guests arrived, touting casserole dishes and breadboards, halos and staffs. "Peace be with you," a local realtor was the first to appear, with barbecued chicken wings under his arm and a scraggly beard pasted to his face. He stood before me in a long, flowing robe studded with rhinestones, a pair of pointed slippers on his feet and a crown on his head. "I come bearing gifts," he said, and turned my oven on low to keep the chicken warm. Next, Donna the neighbor showed up at the door, dressed as another king, and a friend's 12-year-old daughter as a third. Yet a fourth, a Jewish journalist, came with his press tag dangling from his shirt, Mr. Weissman the Third. An artist, originally from Alabama, stuffed a pillow under her dress and became the pregnant St. Elizabeth, cousin of Mary. "Who are we?" she said, standing next to her husband. "Baptists, Southern Baptists." So then we all assembled, and we had a little procession out into the yard going to the barn, and I got to play the Virgin Mary, so I got to ride the donkey, Katie, to the barn. And but, you know, we were looking for room at the end, so we stopped at the neighbor's mudroom door. St. Joseph knocked at the mudroom door, and our neighbor Stu appeared. "See if they'll take MasterCard, will you, honey?" I called. "Can we stay for the night? My wife's about to have a baby." "Do you have a reservation?" We didn't think to call ahead. "I'm sorry." "Oh," I moaned from the donkey. "My wife's going into labor. There's the barn." In the barn, all my past Christmases flashed before me, from those of great joy and festivity of my youth to those rather barren ones of the past few years. Trees and stockings, wrapping paper and bows, even the great beauty of the choirs during midnight mass, all fell away at this moment. Another beauty took over, one of simplicity and starkness, of living your life on the animal level, of going through the miracle of birth on the basis plane, finding your God, finding your place, your connection to all life in a wooden shelter with the smell of droppings around you. In that instant, the Christmas story became wilder, more feral, more full of energy and raw power, closer to the primitive spirit world, closer to me. Silent night, holy night, all is calm. All is bright. Thank you for coming to my home and sharing this celebration with me. I said to my friends after we'd finished the last carol and were about to wind back along the path to the school, the stars in the sky shining brightly down upon us. Inside, I had a box of oranges that my Amish neighbor Moses had sent me from Florida. I planned to give one to every guest. Have a wonderful Christmas and New Year. I couldn't find the words to say more.
Thank you, Mary.
Welcome.
So nice to be able to have, to be able to reenact and to relive and retell a story with your neighbors and your animals, too.
Well, I'm not sure. Everyone has a donkey. We had the donkey, the goat, the sheep. We had the dogs and the cats in there. It was really
fun. And a wise man.
We had lots of wise men. We had tons of wisdom that day.
I don't know. Seems to be a shortage of wisdom around. Speaking of a shortage of wisdom, yesterday the two public meetings for the Bakken Pipeline were held in both Story County and Boone County. And Mary went to the Story County one, and I went to the Boone County one. So we're each going to tell a little bit of what we saw there. So do you want to start with the Nevada gathering, Mary?
Right. The gathering was in the afternoon, and the auditorium was packed. There were, 250, 300 people there. And all parties were represented from the Leona Welders Union to landowners, to Meskwakis, to ISU students. Story County is, and its surrounding areas are pretty, diverse when you begin to look at a room full of people like that.
For the middle of Iowa.
Right. No. Sometimes you just think you're in your own little world and there's nobody else there, but you bring us all together, and it was quite an array of people. And the utilities board was read for about an hour of all the,
the proceedings.
And then the company representatives from the energy transfer company came up, and then the most interesting thing was the question and answer period. And there were questions who were far-ranging from the safety was the main concern of the pipeline to how it's going to work for the landowners and how the company wanted to work with them, but they were going to have to get their own lawyers and the expenses that were involved. And people from the union talked about, how they needed jobs. And then there were questions asked about, is this the right way to go? Are there all other alternatives? But the most powerful, actually, moment was when an Iowa farm woman stood up. She was either from Story or Polk County, can't remember, but, there are pipelines, gas pipelines, pipelines galore under our land right now. And so they showed a map of that. And she said, yes, we have, I think she said, three pipelines that are only 50 feet away from our house. And my father-in-law woke up one day and saw this haze over the land. He couldn't figure out what it was. And so he decided to go down to the coffee shop and ask any of the other guys if they'd seen the same thing. And he got into his car and lit a cigarette, and everything just exploded and blew up, the house, the barn. And then the father-in-law eventually died that evening. And to me, that was a very powerful moment of what can happen when a pipeline leaks.
Right. And just because we have a lot of them already doesn't mean that we can't maybe stop and kind of ask ourselves, what in the world are we doing here?
Yeah, no. I mean, and there were questions like, how are these things going to be monitored? And, the answer was remotely. And I thought, well, how does that mean? And then another question I thought was really important. If there is a fire, such as the one described by the farmer, who's going to put it out? We're a rural state with voluntary fire departments. And I know from living in Kelowna, that is just not easy. Everybody, they ring the bell and everybody just try to jump in their truck or, and get there. And, it's just a lot of dedicated farmers are doing this on a volunteer basis. Will they be trained to put out these kinds of fires?
They talked about that in Boone last night, and actually the gentleman from the pipeline did say that they are prepared to deal with it. But, you know, I'm going, well, where do they live? Where are they? Right. And when pressed, he did admit that their company contributes nothing to the training and preparation of any local departments that might have to voluntarily jump in and deal with this.
So this, you know, your friend at the hardware, the Renz Hardware store, if you still have one, is going to have to do this on top. You know, he's the fire chief of the volunteers.
He's going to have to learn how to deal with these new toxic flammable materials with no compensation extra from the parties involved. The Boone meeting was well attended. There were a couple of things that were really interesting. There was a lot of concern about the tiling, of course, under mm-hmm. the land, and the disruption of the tiling, and a lot of assurances is it'll be fine. And so one of the older farmers brought in three pieces of manual equipment that tiling was actually placed with 75 years ago and showed you how you actually had to dig it and how it was put in there and that the tiling does, in fact, last 75 years. And it was very interesting. I learned a lot about that. And then they talked about, you know, if the tiling is not even, you get backup and silting in other places and how complicated that was. And the other thing that I really understood for the first time that I hadn't thought about was, they're going to compensate the farmers, but they're buying a right-of-way that's only 50 feet wide, which means, and they want to buy it at current land prices. Now, okay, that sounds fair. But it's actually a very small piece of land that they're paying you for. And if you don't accept their price, they have the backup of eminent domain. So the government will force you to take that price. And your whole property will be forever devalued because it has this toxic and dangerous right-of-way. So essentially you are being forced to take the risk of having this on your land in perpetuity. And when you want to sell it, you know that in a real estate deal, you have to disclose all of these things. So it's devaluing your primary asset in life and your way of making money for very, very little return.
Right.
And this is aside from all the environmental consequences. This is just, I think it's a travesty in our community.
Well, and they kept emphasizing at my meeting that they would compensate the farmers for the couple of years that, you know, crops couldn't be grown on this.
Yeah,
that was like a drop in the little strip.
It was
a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, as a non-farmer, I was thinking, the farmers will get paid and they may, but really, it's not adequate what they're offering. And they are using the government as a big stick in the negotiating. You know, it's like, sign this, or else we'll just have to take it to court, and this is what's going to happen. And
you mentioned, Mary, the responsibility of hiring a lawyer is the responsibility of the farmer who is getting a little money for this land. But I bet the money they get for the land isn't going to pay much for an hour of the lawyer's time.
Yeah, $200 to $500 an hour for a lawyer sometimes.
Well, even without the lawyer, I would think that the lessening of the value of the land over time and the risk that you have to live with that and watch for it forever.
Right.
So
this kind of stuff is getting talked about around kitchen tables, I'm sure, all around central Iowa. Not all around central Iowa, all around this big line.
Right, it runs Catty Corner.
Oh, yeah.
The
from
Kitty Corner.
From the
northwest to the southeast of
South
Iowa.
South Dakota to North Dakota and then into Illinois. Oh, down under the Mississippi River.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Another interesting thing was that the Meskwakis brought up is, have you checked to see if there are any burial mounds that you're going to disturb. And they said that they had, tried to make the route the least damaging route possible. But that seemed to be a huge issue for
Yeah.
You know, the people that were there. And I can understand that.
I bet
that.
So. I probably won't go through any nice Christian graveyards.
Exactly. That's what I thought. I thought. Well, they're not going through, you know, my family cemetery, obviously. Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Oh, boy. What a lot of goings on here. Let's talk about pleasant things. Let me tell you my herring recipe.
Oh. Now, are we talking herrings or red herrings here?
Oh, no. This is not a red herring, although red herrings would be great for Christmas, wouldn't they?
Wouldn't they?
So this is for the solstice dinner. I like to have some fish. We don't have a lot of fish in Iowa, so I do a pickled herring dish. And I make my own sour cream out of a thick cream, and I just put a culture in and let it sit for a couple of days. So this recipe is... I have a big cheat. I just go to the regular grocery store and buy the pickled herring, and then I drain off all the stuff they put in it and I add my own stuff. So you take the herring that's been drained and I cut up some apples and some onions and a few carrots for color, and then I put the sour cream on and then horseradish. Mm-hmm. And it is so, so, so yummy. So we will be eating that on the solstice eve by candlelight. And let's see, some other Christmas things. Oh, we're also going to have, I'm going to make, it doesn't really have a name, but it's chocolates and olive and garlic. So it's a
chocolate,
bruschetta.
Chocolate. Well, already I'm interested.
Right, but it's not sweet. It's a savory chocolate thing. So this is a bruschetta. So you're basically toasting a piece of white crusty bread, and you have melted some dark chocolate chips, and into that you mix a black olive tapenade or puree. So it's, you know, the two are the same color, so you don't see them. So it's like salty and chocolatey and not terribly sweet. And then I've got this over a double boiler, and then to that I chop some very finely chopped fresh garlic, and then I warm it just enough that the garlic slightly cooks into the chocolate and the olive, and then you spread that onto the toast, and then you put some roasted or grilled red peppers on the top of it. Oh. Yummy, yummy, yummy.
That sounds like a fuss, but boy, does that sound fun.
You know what?
Fun.
It's not. It's really easy to make.
Oh,
you just
it sounds fun.
Put it in the, you know, the... Well, my idea of a double boiler is just a pan with water in it and a metal bowl over the top. So it's actually quite easy to make for a rather impressive-looking and unusual little hors d'oeuvre.
Oh, appetizers.
Appetizers. And another thing I'm going to make for the holidays is I'm going to make an eggnog panna cotta. And I'm probably also going to make eggnog. Eggnog is really simple. Just in the blender, I put, because we have really good eggs here, I put fresh raw eggs, milk, cream, sugar, whip it up, and then you pour a little brandy or a little rum into it.
What is a little?
it's up to your discretion.
Oh, because a glug, a shot.
I think for a party, I'd probably put a shot per cup.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right. That sounds good.
You know, you can be a little more modest than that if you want. Or for the panna cotta, I'm going to make the eggnog, and I will put less alcohol in it, just enough to flavor it. And then you mix it with a little bit of gelatin and then let it, you know, firm up in the refrigerator. So it's like a little... custardy thing.
Oh, good.
And I'm going to serve it with your ginger snaps. Tell us about your ginger snaps.
Ginger snaps. For years I have been making ginger snaps, and I take them to potlucks, and people seem to like them.
Yeah, it's like, I bet you can't eat just one. They're good.
And they're pretty good, and they are really, I love to have ginger snaps around Christmas time. They just taste right. I'll let you know that this recipe is on the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage, which is part of the KHOI website, and you can find that at khoifm.org. Go to Talk, go to Donna Lana Kitchen, and find the recipes there and past shows. But anyway, look for the ginger snap cookie recipe. I originally got this recipe long, long time ago from the Des Moines Register when they were putting really good recipes in. I don't know, long about the early 90s or the late 80s, something like that. They had good recipes in the Des Moines Register. And this is the Des Moines Register Ginger Snap Cookies. I've changed it a little bit because originally the Des Moines Register recipe called for 1 cup Crisco to start out with, and I've sort of like moved on from that. And so I in the recipe, I just put 1 cup shortening. You can use your own judgment there. I tend to use butter, and I've even used some good lard too in it.
I think butter and lard together might make a nice combination.
It does. I find that all butter makes them really soft and yummy, but I kind of like ginger snaps to have some snap and be a little crackly, and it seems that a little bit of lard or something else in it would help a little bit with that. And it's got lots of molasses in it. And I make it with a good helping of ground ginger, and I've also chopped up a tablespoon of candied ginger. And that stuff is good just to have in the kitchen to nibble on, but I like that too. If you really want to be fancy, You could also grate in some fresh ginger root,
yes.
And then you could have a 3 ginger ginger snap, and it would be. But I didn't do that. I'm lucky to have 2 out of the 3 in my kitchen at one time. So I just go anyway. The recipe's on the website. Please make it, enjoy it, pass it around. It's a good cookie. It's a good cookie for solstice. For Christmas?
And they remind me of my grandmother.
Well, isn't that good? Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You're listening to KHOI Radio. That music was by the Iowa band Harvest Home, Al and Alita Murphy and Bob Black from their Christmas album, I believe it's called It's Christmas Time or something like that. They do a fine job. They're over in Eastern Iowa. And that tune, that was two tunes you just heard. The first one was the Silver Bells reel, and then kind of morphed into Jingle Bells there. Al Murphy, in his liner notes on the little CD, says that the tune Silver Bells, it's not the Silver Bells we know, it's Silver Bells. He learned from the playing of Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. It was popular in the early 20th century from the Tin Pan Alley Music Hall tradition, that version of Silver Bells. So people used to hum that a lot. We can hum it now. That's
Silver
good.
Silver Bells.
And then there's that one. Then there's that one.
Silver Bells.
Thank you, Donna. That's good. Donna, tell us some more about sweet treats for Christmas.
Well, one thing I am going to promise that next week I'm going to bring my grandmother's plum pudding recipe.
Oh, my.
And we'll talk about that. But I'm going to make something that's English traditional, not in my family, but it's a trifle. And this is something that children love, unlike plum pudding, which is something mostly only adults love. The trifle is... It's actually very simple, but it's multiple steps. So, of course, it's pudding, usually vanilla flavored pudding, and then cake, like either lady fingers or sheet cake. So you have to make the cake, you have to make the pudding, and you have to make the whipped cream and some fruit. I think I might use pears this year. And another recipe that I read recently also includes a homemade fruit gelatin. So I may make like a raspberry gelatin cut into little cubes. So you kind of layer in the cake, the pudding, the jello pieces, the fruit, and then you top it all with whipped cream. And then you just, it's in a, I have a clear bowl glass, so it kind of stacks up and you see it in layers. And then you just put a big old spoon in and you come out and blob it onto your plate, and it is delicious somehow.
It's a pretty thing. It's a pretty thing for a centerpiece.
A trifle.
And a good name, too. I like that. And you had a little cocktail that you would...
Oh, yes. I've made a homemade cocktail this year. I am calling it the Ghost of Christmas Past because it uses some kind of old-fashioned ingredients. You know, I've been on all year about shrub making. So this shrub is you grind a bunch of apples up and then you add sugar and vinegar and cardamom, and you let it sit for, a few weeks or something. So, and then you strain it all off so it's just a liquid. So the cocktail, the Ghost of Christmas Past, will be Pimm's, which is an English liqueur, more of an aperitif, gin, lemon, and the apple cardamom shrub. So that will be our solstice
that
drink.
That sounds good. We've been talking about traditions and things that we do to celebrate the solstice. So, celebrate an old tradition, or start a new one.
We're doing a lot of celebrating right now.
Or start a new one. Start a new tradition. This tune is called Breaking Up Christmas by the Harvest Home Band. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen for quite a while.
Absolutely. And let's not forget to mention that this year we started the Donna Lana Kitchen podcast.
Have a good solstice.
And happy holidays.
Eat good food and enjoy life.
Santa Claus come done and gone, breaking up Christmas right along. Yonder long time ago, the old folks passed a do-si-do.